My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're either stopping digging or you're digging deeper. Our perspective is to not only stop digging, but to try to reduce the deficit and debt with highly progressive tax increases and very smart spending cuts that actually help people by lowering the cost of prescription drugs, by lowering the cost of Medicare, by lowering the cost of insulin, by lowering the cost of health coverage. The other side is proposing a $4.6 trillion unpaid for tax cut, and we will not stand by and watch that happen. That's exactly moving in the wrong direction that Chair Powell was warning against.
That's White House Economic Advisor Jared Bernstein talking about what they're going to do and what the other side is going to do, that massive unpaid for tax cut. And one of the people who's involved in helping advise on economics for the Trump campaign, Steve Moore. And he joins us once again, distinguished fellow in economics at Heritage Foundation and a Trump economic advisor. Welcome back, Steve. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Annie. Good to be with you.
Thank you. I want to know what you think about what Jared Bernstein is talking about, the other side, I guess your side there on the Trump campaign, and how you would effectively put in place unpaid for tax cuts.
Well, it's amazing because, you know, we have this nearly $2 trillion deficit that we're running under Biden. Biden's probably been the most financially reckless president in the history of the country. And, you know, they can't come up with any solution to cutting spending. Listening to Jared's a friend of mine. I've known him for 25 years. Mm-hmm. They can't think of a single program they want to get rid of out of the thousands and thousands of programs that are all redundant and ineffective. And then does he really think we're going to be able to balance the budget by just taxing the top 1%? I mean, you could take every penny of the top 1%. You wouldn't have enough money to balance the budget. So it's an absurdity, and it shows, you know, that you got to grow the economy. How are you going to get more jobs and grow the economy if you're going to tax the businesses that create the jobs?
Grow government jobs and claim
Well, you know, and that's where the jobs are, by the way. You know, the latest report, again, I think this is like the eighth report in a row that showed that the government is the fastest growing industry. And, you know, they should be laying off workers, not adding more workers. I mean, my God. I want to make sure people understand what a deep, deep pit we've fallen into. It's going to take Trump years to get us out of this hole. And Biden has no solution except raise taxes.
I want you to explain very, very simple terms that even I can understand as a non-economic expert. What does it mean when they say an aggressive, progressive tax? They're talking about implementing this, and all I'm supposed to do is be like, well, I guess it's good for me, and then support it. Why wouldn't I?
Well, first of all, when we cut the tax rates, we did it not because we love American companies or American corporations. We wanted to bring jobs back to the United States. We had when Trump came into office, we had the highest business tax rate in the world, Annie. I mean, how are you going to compete if you have the highest taxes? That's like same reason California and New York can't compete. Where are all the jobs going in America? They're going to Texas. They're going to Tennessee. They're going to Florida. They're going to Utah. They're going to very low tax areas. So businesses move to places with low taxes. And so how are we going to be able to get jobs and factories and you know, productivity in the American economy, new businesses, if we have the highest business tax rate in the world? I mean, I'm sorry, it just doesn't make any sense. And so what Trump's plan is, you know, is to try to lower the tax rates, make America a more conducive place for investment, more conducive place to start businesses, and let the private sector grow. Because right now the government is growing, but the private sector isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, people on my side of the aisle generally think like they just don't know what's good for America. They're not implementing the things that need to happen to make America great. And I don't know that the other side's definition of making America great looks like our definition of it. So maybe in right, they're having their own success, but their success looks like our failure.
Yeah. And look, I'm going to make this very simple because I know most people, you know, listening to the show aren't economists, but it's pretty simple. If you tax something, Annie, you're going to get less of it, right? That's right. Why we tax smoking, because we don't want people to smoke as much. If you tax something less, you get more of it. So what we did is let's take some of the taxes off of the businesses, tax some of the taxes off the workers so they will work more, they will invest more, they will start businesses, and it works. And by the way, this year, the amount of federal revenues to the Treasury is the highest ever in American history. Hmm. We do not have a revenue problem. We have an overspending problem. And, I think it was Reagan. It was Ronald Reagan who said it very well. You don't give, somebody who's a spendaholic a bigger allowance. That's right. Not the solution to the problem. And that's what the Biden administration is proposing.
Steve Moore is with us right now. He's a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, also Trump economic advisor. Now, what the main thing that people are talking about in conjunction with the Heritage Foundation is Project 2025. And I'm looking under Wikipedia, which is where I think a lot of people would look to find out what the heck this is. Under economy, it says from Wikipedia, Project 2025 provides a range of options for economic reform that vary in their degree of radicalism. What do you know about Project 2025, and is it radical?
Well, I wrote the chapter on the tax policy, and we put together an agenda that is basically what a conservative administration should do. Now, that doesn't mean Donald Trump is going to do everything we ask, and certainly he won't. And he put out a statement saying, I'm not going to, you know, this is not my game plan. But I think he will adopt a lot of our ideas. I'm very proud of having been part of it. But Trump is, you know, every president comes up with their own agenda. But this is a conservative game plan for what America should look like. And we want to flatten the tax rates. We want to cut government spending. We want to start promoting more American energy. We want to cut the bureaucracy in Washington. I think about 95% of the things that are in that report are things that most Americans would agree with.
Yeah. And it's definitely been something that I've seen the activism on the left try to make it a boogeyman. Project 2025.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
Nobody who's criticizing it really could probably tell you much of anything that's in it.
Exactly. All right, Danny, I hope you have a great week ahead. And I look forward to talking to you next Monday.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, Trump economic advisor on Twitter at Stephen Moore. That's Stephen with the PH right in there. I think that the Project 2025 talking point is it's kind of an interesting study in politics and activism. What can you do? What can you create that can rally a lot of people against something? And Project 2025, when we had Jim Carafano and Hans von Spakovsky and we had one other person here.
Remember? Said Vicky Coates, I think.
No, it wasn't her.
No.
But we had them in studio to talk to us, and we were discussing the different things that we are, you know, experiencing in that moment in time. And this was like a year ago. And while we were discussing what was going on at that very moment, the idea of Project 2025 came to pass. And somebody was asking about it in our chat, and I asked them about it off the air, and they were talking about how this is a blueprint of what Heritage Foundation would like to see a Republican administration, and truly any administration. They don't have to be Republican to see, you know, if you have a Republican administration come in and 80% of it is like, yeah, that's our policy. Let's go. It's laid out. Let's run with it. 20%, we're going to leave that aside. We don't think it's the key focus of this administration. If you were to take one individual, Genevieve Wood was the other one. It just came to my mind. If you were to take one or two policies, if the Biden administration were to take one or two policies out of the Heritage Foundation's vision for what they'd like to see, it's a think tank. That's what they are. That's what they do. They think about things. They document them. They research them. They talk to people who have great experience in each of these individual areas, and they come together and they formulate policy or a plan or a vision. This is what there are think tanks that exist on the left and on the right. And the Heritage Foundation has done a very good job of marketing Project 2025. And you know this because the folks on the left decided to create a boogeyman that wasn't just specifically adjacent to Donald Trump. It was bigger than Donald Trump. And Project 2025, like if you're Heritage Foundation, you're probably pretty flattered that what they've put together is so overtly frightening. And when you hear people criticizing Project 2025, some of them know some of the details and the talking points in them because they're more committed. They're more interested in researching and presenting talking points in a way that is persuasive. But there are other people who hear those individuals talking about and they're just like, oh, Project 2025, it's scary, blah, 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 blah. Have you heard of Project 2030? I mean, look, research that. There are visions that are compiled from people all across the country. And listen, it's as First Amendment as it possibly gets. To bring people together, to create a vision and to put it down and then to try to lobby those who might be in a position to take that policy up and make it come to fruition, that's what you do. That's politics. And the Heritage Foundation has definitely been successful in doing that. The America First Policy Institute, they have a similar type of layout and plan and policy. And a lot of the people who are at America First Policy Institute will probably likely end up back in the Trump administration should he win re-election in November. And the idea of Donald Trump's initial term, which started in 2017, and him coming in and being so much of an outsider, not part of the swamp, that it took them a really long time to get their feet wet, to get in there and understand how things work, to understand who they could trust, to understand how to utilize the authority that comes with the office of the presidency to get stuff done. They are working on day one being effective leaders should they win the Oval Office again. That's a smart move. Donald Trump has, it was kind of not thrilled that he came out and said that he didn't know anything about Project 2025. He certainly would know things about Project 2025. If I were Donald Trump, I would not endorse any one plan from any one place because I would want to compile the suggestions of all of the think tanks that are out there to see what they all have to say to make sure that you couldn't make a policy at Heritage better by dipping into something at the America First Policy Institute or any of these other different locations, Americans for Prosperity. I mean, they're all over the place. Hillsdale College, universities across the country have thinkers who put these ideas together. And then what a wise leader does is he listens to everybody. She takes in all of the different opinions and thinks on it and thinks more broadly than just a narrow-minded, all right, let's just take that and run with it. The Project 2025 thing is kind of amusing to me, mostly because the people who I see implementing it and invoking Project 2025 in an argument, I don't know, Brad, how much you've seen of this, but it's like as soon as you put Project 2025, everyone's supposed to just understand the emotion that's attached to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually associated with pictures of people in handmaidens dresses and they've turned the Washington Monument into a cross.
Dude, I was in D.C. this past week. That wasn't real.
No.
That was a cheap fake. Unless I was one of them. Maybe I was one of the Handmaid's Tale. Okay. What do we do? Let's listen in real quick.
Leadership.
This is the
press secretary. We have now
created secretary.
A total of 15.7 million jobs over the last 3.5 years. Yesterday, a record 3 million travelers were screened at airports. A sign that our economy is strong and Americans are back on the road for the summer in record numbers. Speaking of which, last week we sold 1 million barrels of gasoline to help lower gas prices ahead of the 4th of July, which saw the lowest gas prices in 3 years. And today, a new report from the Economic Innovation Group highlighted what the New York Times called a quote, a remarkable comeback under President Biden. That report found that communities that have been lifted behind struggled under the last administration, what the Times called a particularly grim stretch under Donald Trump. But those communities are coming back under President Biden, with jobs growing more than 4 times faster than in the previous 4 years. Investments spurred by the president's Investing in America agenda are benefiting previously left behind communities. That's just some of the economic progress happening under President Biden. Watch out for more news in the coming days. Exciting. And next, I want to share highlights from the president's recent schedule, as well as looking ahead to the next 2 weeks. So over the last 10 days, President Biden has been hitting the road and meeting directly with the American people, as well as continuing his job as leader of the country. In the 2 days after the debate, he met with supporters in Atlanta, Raleigh, New York, and New Jersey. Last week, he delivered remarks on the Supreme Court, visited the D.C. Emergency Operations Center for a briefing on extreme weather events, hosted a Medal of Honor ceremony, and joined the First Lady for a 4th of July barbecue with active duty military service members and their families. Throughout the week, the president also spoke with leaders of the UK, United Kingdom, Israel, and the Republic of South Africa. On Friday, the president traveled to Madison, Wisconsin for a campaign rally. On Sunday, just yesterday, he held numerous events across Pennsylvania with elected officials, including Governor Shapiro, Senator Fetterman, and Congresswoman Madeleine Dean. He participated in interviews, including joining Morning Joe just this morning. And throughout, the president has engaged with elected leaders, including members of Congress, governors, and local officials. This week, President Biden will speak to national labor leaders of AFL-CIO, host the NATO summit to show the unprecedented strength of our alliance, hold a press conference, a big boy press conference, according to Justin Sink from Bloomberg, who's not here, but Josh, you are here, I see you. So that will happen on Thursday, and travel to Michigan on Friday for a campaign event. And next week, he will travel to Texas and Las Vegas. On July 15th, he will commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas. He will highlight the Biden-Harris administration's progress advancing civil rights and his vision to bring America together. On July 16th, he will address the 115th NAACP National Convention in Las Vegas, emphasizing the Biden-Harris administration's commitment to advancing racial justice and equity for all Americans, including Black Americans. On July 17th, he will speak to the UNIDOS annual conference, where he will underline the Biden-Harris administration's historic accomplishments, including lowering prescription drug costs for America's seniors, lowering the Latino uninsured rate, and creating a Latino small business boom. And finally, I just mentioned the U.S. is going to be hosting the 75th summit, the NATO summit, right here in the United States, obviously in Washington, D.C. this week. NATO is the most powerful and capable alliance in the world, and President Biden is proud, very proud, to have worked to strengthen it and also expand it. So with that, the Admiral from the National Security Council is here to take your questions on that.
All right, I'm going to break in right here. They're going to have John Kirby is going to speak about some things that are taking place overseas, of course. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back, we're going to listen into the question and answer session from Corinne Jean-Pierre and the press pool right there. So we want to make sure we bring you that. And so don't go anywhere. When you come back, you'll be able to listen along to the questions, because we expect some very fiery questions to be asked of the press secretary.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Secretary is Joe Biden.
Obviously, Joe Biden is going to need to consider, for his own sake and his own legacy, can he beat Donald Trump? Is the best to beat Donald Trump? But also that the profound impact this decision, maybe the most important of his presidency, will have on the House, on the Senate, on the future of the country.
Senator Adam, or Senator, oh crap, I jumped the gun there. Oh no! Maybe could be Senator Garvey, you never know. Representative Adam Schiff talking about whether or not Joe Biden should drop out of the race. Of course, he is running for Senate, so he's a very impactful congressman right now on this voice that needs to come out of Congress about whether or not they're going to continue to back Joe Biden, specifically in the Democrat Party. We spoke in the 12 o'clock hour with Representative Mike Bost, Illinois' 12th District Congressman, and he gave us his personal view on the whole situation and said this is pretty unprecedented in his time in government, but we wanted to get a broader view. So let's bring our friend Ryan Schmelz onto the show with us. He's Fox News Radio, Radio's Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. And my new friend, I met him when I was in D.C. with the eighth grade class trip, which is really cool. Ryan, it's good to have you back on the show. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Go Cardinals, Annie.
That's right. Thank you very much. I got to go back this past weekend and see two wins and then one butt kicking. The Nationals laid it out on the Cardinals. We're going to talk about that. So speaking of butt kicking, let's talk about Congress. Let's talk about Capitol Hill. What are you learning Monday now that we see the Congress folks coming back into town with everything that's been going on with the Joe Biden questions that loom large?
Right. So we're still expecting members of Congress to start rolling in over the next couple of hours. But I think the big thing we're starting to see today is kind of a reassurance behind President Biden. You know, he sent out this letter a few hours ago that pretty much states that he is staying in the race. It pushes back on a lot of the criticisms that have been thrown his way since that disastrous debate performance. And we've seen a lot of Democrats start to fall in line and reassure their support of President Biden over the last couple of hours. Now, there still are a couple of them who have come out publicly and said that they are concerned with President Biden. We had reporting that there was initially going to be a Senate meeting this Monday, as in today, and within the next couple of hours, but that meeting got moved to tomorrow to during their normal Democratic policy luncheons. And that meeting is going to discuss some of the concerns that senators have with President Biden's candidacy. And another thing you're starting to see some of these senators start to put out, including John Tester, who's in a swing battleground state in Montana, as well as a couple other ones. They say they want to see President Biden in more situations that are unscripted so that they can prove that President Biden is still capable of doing this job. As in, this is going to be a pivotal week for President Biden in every public appearance he makes to prove to Democrats that he can still carry this job.
It's a really interesting thought coming out from the left, like if you can do it. And that's something that we've heard President Biden say multiple times. It's one of his go-to lines. Watch me. And he says that he can handle the job. George Stephanopoulos interview last Friday didn't really assuage a lot of concerns, but he did get through it. He did, you know, answer all the questions. Like, Jill Biden is really proud of him, of course. We're speaking with Ryan Schmelz with Fox News Radio. He's a Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. As more representatives and senators come back, do you expect them to want to speak on the issue, or is it going to be hard for you to get them to, you know, give you that comment and make a statement on this issue? How does something like that generally work?
Well, we're going to find out. I think maybe to put it this in perspective, normally whenever there is what we call the jailbreak, that's whenever the House or Senate lets out for the day and all the lawmakers come running down the steps so they can go home. Normally, when this happens, you have the certain members who are in more demand than others. And certainly on the House side, Republicans have probably been in more demand this Congress because they're in the majority. Now, everything changed after that debate to the point where every single Democrat who came running down the steps the next day was in demand from the press because we wanted to get comment from them. We wanted to hear what they felt about that debate performance, if they still had confidence in President Biden, and who were going to be the ones who called on President Biden to step aside. And what's fascinating is over the last week, they've been on recess. So the press hasn't really had an opportunity to grill some of these lawmakers about this. And a lot of them have been able to come out on their own terms and either request the president step aside for a different candidate or stand behind the president. So I think this week you're going to see a lot of movement in terms of meetings. You're going to see a lot of movement in terms of members of Congress being pressed on this issue over and over again. But it's still very early, but a lot of things can happen over the next 24, 48 hours.
We're speaking with Fox News Radio's Ryan Schmelz about what is going on Capitol Hill as they figure out the Joe Biden question. It's a big question. It might be the question specifically right now in the news. Is it your sense from who you've been able to talk to so far or where this is headed Is it just about the campaign? Is it just about November? Or is there an honest, broader conversation about his ability to do the job right now?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of both. I think Republicans certainly are trying to message on that. You have Chip Roy, the congressman from Texas, who is offering an amendment or a resolution that he's going to introduce this week that would require, or it would pretty much send a message to Vice President Harris to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Biden from office. What we understand is that he's going to speak with the conference about this likely tomorrow during their weekly policy breakfast. So we can expect that, some movement on that front. And what other sense I'm kind of getting from Republicans is, if we were going to talk about who maybe the big winner was from the debate between former President Trump and President Biden, it has to be the swing district Republicans. And the reason why I say that is because these were individuals who are defending, and in some cases, they're defending Biden plus districts. So they've been getting a lot of questions about former President Trump being at the top of their ticket. Now, their opponents are going to be getting a lot of questions about President Biden being at the top of their ticket. So that's probably one of the big things that we've seen, is this level of confidence that's been risen from a lot of these Republicans who are defending swing districts or trying to win swing districts, because it's put Democrats on the defensive.
Yeah, that is such an interesting and important point for people to be paying attention to. Like the representatives who do decide to come out and speak, or the senators who do decide to come out and speak, you know, what party are they representing? And are those districts pro-Biden districts? Are they going to be purple, as you were mentioning? You talked about, you know, with the Chip Roy comment about Kamala Harris and the potential invoking of the 25th Amendment. I mean, that is such that would just be show-stopping to watch that unfold. But aside from that, maybe Joe Biden decides he would maybe step aside for the campaign. A lot of people, as you said, are also having a combination conversation about his ability to do the presidency right now. Is there a lot of conversation about Kamala Harris as the vice president who would become the president in that instance right now, or Kamala Harris as the presumptive fill-in nominee for Joe Biden should he step out?
We've heard a little bit of chatter. You know, there have been members of Congress, both on the Senate side and the House side, who have said that they would support Harris if she were the nominee. Now, those were more direct answers to direct questions, as in, well, if Vice President Harris becomes the nominee, would you support her? And they say, yes, of course, she's going to be if she's the party nominee, I will support her. So it's just more of just a direct answer. I think what was fascinating is that you saw Tim Ryan, who was representing a swing district in Ohio for a very long time, no longer a member of Congress, ran for president against both President Biden and Vice President Harris. He's already come out and made a very clear statement that he thinks Kamala Harris should be the nominee and should take over for President Biden. And he pushed back on some of these narratives that go around, pretty much claiming that if anybody thinks that Kamala Harris would be a more of a liability at the top of the ticket compared to President Biden, he says that's nonsensical for people to think that way. So Ryan had a very strong statement there in support of Kamala Harris, and it would be the most feasible option. Obviously, one thing to keep in mind is we are very close to convention time. When Lyndon B. Johnson dropped out of the race and decided not to be the Democrat nominee anymore, we were over 100 days away from the Dem convention. We're now less than 50 days away from the Democratic convention. So to find another candidate and to not just do a simple transition from the vice president to having her at the top of the ticket would be very hard for Democrats to pull off. It's not that it would be impossible, but those are things to consider when you think about somebody else besides Vice President Harris taking over if President Biden were to step aside.
We're speaking with Fox News Radio's Ryan Schmelz and his insight there as a Capitol Hill correspondent for Fox News Radio. One final question for you before we let you go. I am interested in who you are watching potentially to be a leader on, you know, maybe the final word from within the Democrat Party there on Capitol Hill. Who are you looking to definitively say, Joe Biden's the guy, everybody back down? Or maybe some individual representative senators that you might see being able to vocally come out and lead for the alternative?
Oh, it's got to be the people who are in leadership. I think Hakeem Jeffries is a name to watch. I think the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Pramila Jayapal, is somebody to watch. I would also look at, Pete Aguilar, who's the number three Democrat, Catherine Clark, the whip. And then, of course, on the Senate side, you have to watch for Dick Durbin, who is the number two Senate Democrat, but also the chair of the Judiciary Committee. Pretty much anybody in leadership, those are the ones you're going to want to have to watch for, because if one of them makes a concerning statement surrounding President Biden, that's going to carry a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. But as long as they stay true and stay loyal to President Biden, it's hard for that domino effect to really take effect here. So I think watching them, those are going to be the big ones to watch.
I appreciate that. And one follow up to that, if I might, just the Democrat Party in the House specifically, they've got a few different wings of the Democrat mm-hmm. Party there. Do you see any sort of breaking with the squad versus the rank and file Democrats?
Yeah, it's so far, it seems like it's been a pretty diverse group of members who've come out and asked for President Biden to step aside. You know, you've got Adam Quigley, who's a very prominent member, who's, I believe, he chairs the Ukraine caucus. He's been in for a long time, considered to be an establishment guy. He's somebody who has come out and asked President Biden to step aside. You've seen some other members, too, here and there. And then, you know, Robert Garcia is, I think, one that's been fascinating. He's a congressman from California, the freshman class president, a very progressive member from California, but also somebody who's a Biden campaign surrogate. And he has stayed true and passionately defended President Biden in the days after the debate. So I think it's a pretty diverse group of different wings of the party who've either come out and said they're concerned or reaffirmed their support for President Biden.
Ryan Schmelz, we're grateful for you. Thank you for the time today. What a time to be doing what you're doing and what I'm doing here to be able to cover this. It's very historical, and we're grateful that you were able to share some of that with us today.
It was great to be on, Annie, and this is going to be a fun week, so stay tuned.
Yes, we will. Absolutely. We'll have you back soon. Ryan Schmelz, thank you so much. Okay, that was very interesting. Good insight. And we will continue to reach out and try to get the on the ground reaction from Ryan and Chad Pergram and the whole crew there. Ryan's great. And he was very kind. He came and met me when I was in D.C. in May. And wonderful guy. Loves the show, which is cool. Are they doing questions yet?
Yeah,
is it talk in the microphone? What are you doing?
Sorry,
Brad.
They've been in questions. I've got so many irons in the fire right now.
I can tell. Right?
They've been doing questions. I've been kind of following it, mainly on Ukraine spending.
Still policy questions.
Yeah,
we're gonna take a quick break, and we come back. Brad and I will bring you back into the conversation and listen to these questions that they ask, because they're still asking John Kirby. We want to know the questions about the administration, what Corinne Jean-Pierre has to field in that regard, and we will have that for you on this show. Great to talk to Ryan Schmelz. We also spoke with Steve Moore and Congressman Mike Bost earlier in the show, so check it out on the Annie Fry Show podcast. A quick break, and let's get to those questions here in the press pool at the White House when we come back.
Summit this week. It's also the first time the president interacted with these world leaders since that disastrous debate against former President Trump 10 days or so ago, where the president struggled to confront the former president on all sorts of things. What is the president's, does the president feel how does he plan to reassure American allies in NATO that he's up for the job now when he couldn't confront Trump on stage then?
I think the question presupposes the notion that they need to be reassured of American leadership and President Biden's commitment, and I don't believe that's the case. We're not picking up any signs of that from our allies at all, quite the contrary. The conversations that we're having with them in advance, they're excited about this summit, they're excited about the possibilities and the things that we're going to be doing together, specifically to help Ukraine.
So you've seen zero, there have been stories in multiple outlets from both sides of the Atlantic over the last several days with questions from European leaders about the president's capacity to lead the United States. Are you just denying that?
I'm not aware of any such conversations that have been had, certainly none with us and here at the White House and with our staff. We're looking forward to it. I want to go back to what I said at the beginning. In the last 3 years, rather than browbeaten and insulting and demeaning allies, this president has invested in allies and partnerships. And when he took office, what I said, only nine allies had reached the 2% level. Now 23. That's not by accident. That's because of leadership. That's because of constant stewardship of the alliance and other partnerships around the world. The president's record speaks for itself, and the allies and the non-NATO friends and partners that are coming as well, they know that. They wouldn't be coming. New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, to a NATO summit if they didn't believe in American leadership and how important it is, and if they didn't believe that President Biden takes that responsibility extremely seriously.
John Kirby speaking from the White House podium, press secretary podium right now. I don't believe that. And I think it's funny that he's saying, like, nobody's having these conversations. We haven't caught any wind of anybody who's having these types of conversations. Meanwhile, Friday on ABC.
Can you serve effectively for the next 4 years?
George, I'm the guy that put NATO together, the future. No one thought I could expand it. I'm the guy that shut Putin down. No one thought it could happen. I'm the guy that put together the South Pacific Initiative with AUKUS. I'm the guy that got 50 nations out, not only in Europe, outside of Europe as well, to help Ukraine.
You know, he sounds really old. He sounds a lot older listening to him. I watched the whole interview multiple times, and he sounds a lot older, but he also sounds like Christian Bale's Batman.
So maybe he's
maybe old Batman.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's kind of, you know, so the opposite of incognito, like way out in front of everybody so that nobody would suspect him.
I'm just waiting for him to look at George and go, look at me. And George would be like, I am looking right at you, bud.
I'm just glad to know that he shut down Putin. That's news to me.
It's news to Putin.
Yeah.
Here's more from the interview.
Let me ask you a tougher, more personal question. Are you sure you're being honest with yourself when you say you have the mental and physical capacity to serve another 4 years?
Yes, I am, because, George, the last thing I want to do is not be able to meet that. I think as some of the senior...
All right, I got to interrupt this because there's going to be more that I'm going to want to talk about.
Okay.
The last thing I want to do is not be able to meet that. That means absolute horse hockey about what you're actually capable of doing. Like, okay, good to note that you still have the desire to beat Donald Trump. You also had the desire to put Putin down. And I don't know if that's actually what the actual case was.
Economist and senior foreign policy specialist say, if I stop now, I'd go down history as a pretty successful president. No one thought I could get done what we got done.
But are you being honest with yourself as well about your ability to defeat Donald Trump right now?
Yes.
George, yes. That's why I'm here. It's literally the only reason I'm here. It's why I gave you those note cards.
Go back and watch that interview. I'm very curious. I would like to know what the stage looked like on the opposite side of the cameras, because every time Stephanopoulos asks a question that is a little bit more pressing than the last, because I think that, I mean, this is new frontier for this media against Joe Biden, which makes me think they just don't think Joe Biden is the guy anymore. And he's not playing, he's not cooperating, so they got to shift. But when Stephanopoulos goes just a little bit further and a little bit further, Biden leans back in his chair. He smiles with half of his mouth. Why does he only ever smile with a crooked smile in half his mouth? Ooh. You ever notice that?
No, I haven't.
He smiles with half of his mouth, and he looks, if you're watching the TV, he looks up and to the right of your screen almost every time. Who is he looking at? Who's telling him how to react? Who is there just for a visual affirmation? Why does he look to the side? Am I being psychotic by saying this? In the context where we don't watch him get marching orders, literally, of you will do this and then you will do that. And if he doesn't have them, he has no friggin' clue what he's supposed to do next. Who is he looking at? And why does the guy who's the president of the United States need to look anywhere for affirmation? If he looked away from George Stephanopoulos to answer that question, Bill O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor always used to have a body language specialist on. And I was like, yes, I love that. But I really pay attention to people's nonverbal reactions because they will tell you a lot more with what they do versus what they say. And when people are talking to you and they look away and they do it repeatedly, there's usually a reason for that. Who is he looking at, and why does he look there every time these questions get difficult? And he leans back to kind of ha-ha laugh about whatever it is, as if the question didn't deserve his sincerity in his answer. Like, haha, oh, come on, George, you know better than that. Here's one more.
Would you be willing to undergo an independent medical evaluation that included neurological and cognitive tests and release the results to the American people?
Look, I have a cognitive test every single day.
That's why we're here.
I think he might have meant literally, though.
Oh, what was the thing that Trump was said? He was like, bear, TV, VCR, fern, or something. I don't remember what it was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
They gave him some sort of cognitive test because if you just ask him, he'll tell you how good it was.
Yeah, yeah.
You talked about it in the debate, how great
That's
he was.
Right.
But I think that they would like show him a pattern. And then I think maybe he had to repeat it or something.
And then
I don't know.
He just said it out
but
loud.
But there's copy points. There are clips of him just going like apple, cup, Pepsi, pencil, George of the Jungle or something like that. And it's like, and the left plays it over and over and over again. Like, gosh, come see how stupid this guy looks. And the right is like, it's stupid, but really funny. And we'll allow it.
I got to say, when you ask the question, who does he keep looking at off camera? The only answer that came into my head was the church lady. Could it be Satan?
Exactly. Here's the rest of that clip here real quick.
Every day I have that test. Everything I do. You know, not only am I campaigning, but I'm running the world.
Yeah, that's the problem, dude. Now listen. Corinne Jean-Pierre just started taking questions. I think she knew that we were going into a hard break, and she's like, "I'll wait until the Annie Fry Show goes to hard break and
she's
sneak this
the live
in here."
Stream.
Let's Mystery Science Theater it when we come back.
Yeah,
and we'll only put you through as much as we can handle, which is super house when we come back.
Summit this week. It's also the first time the president interacted with these world leaders since that the disastrous debate against former President Trump 10 days or so ago, where the president struggled to confront the former president on all sorts of things. What is the president's, does the president feel how does he plan to reassure American allies in NATO that he's up for the job now when he couldn't confront Trump on stage then?
I think the question presupposes the notion that they need to be reassured of American leadership and President Biden's commitment, and I don't believe that's the case. We're not picking up any signs of that from our allies at all, quite the contrary. The conversations that we're having with them in advance, they're excited about this summit, they're excited about the possibilities and the things that we're going to be doing together, specifically to help Ukraine.
So you've seen there have been stories in multiple outlets on both sides of the Atlantic over the last several days with questions from European leaders about the president's capacity to lead the United States. Are you just denying that?
I'm not aware of any such conversations that have been had, certainly none with us and here at the White House and with our staff. We're looking forward to it. I want to go back to what I said at the beginning. In the last 3 years, rather than browbeaten and insulting and demeaning allies, this president has invested in allies and partnerships. And when he took office, what I said, only nine allies had reached the 2% level. Now 23. That's not by accident. That's because of leadership. That's because of constant stewardship of the alliance and other partnerships around the world. The president's record speaks for itself, and the allies and the non-NATO friends and partners that are coming as well, they know that. They wouldn't be coming. New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, to a NATO summit if they didn't believe in American leadership and how important it is, and if they didn't believe that President Biden takes that responsibility extremely seriously.
John Kirby speaking from the White House podium, press secretary podium right now. I don't believe that. And I think it's funny that he's saying, like, nobody's having these conversations. We haven't caught any wind of anybody who's having these types of conversations. Meanwhile, Friday on ABC.
Can you serve effectively for the next 4 years?
George, I'm the guy that put NATO together, the future. No one thought I could expand it. I'm the guy that shut Putin down. No one thought it could happen. I'm the guy that put together the South Pacific Initiative with AUKUS. I'm the guy that got 50 nations out, not only in Europe, outside of Europe as well, to help Ukraine.
You know, he sounds really old. He sounds a lot older listening to him. I watched the whole interview multiple times, and he sounds a lot older, but he also sounds like Christian Bale as Batman.
So maybe he's
maybe old he's Batman.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's kind of, the opposite of incognito, like way out in front of everybody so that nobody would suspect him.
I'm just waiting for him to look at George and go, "Look at me." And George would be like, I am looking right at you, bud.
I'm just glad to know that he shut down Putin. That's news to me.
It's news to Putin.
Yeah.
Here's more from the interview.
Let me ask you a tougher, more personal question. Are you sure you're being honest with yourself when you say you have the mental and physical capacity to serve another 4 years?
Yes, I am, because George, the last thing I want to do is not be able to meet that. I think as some of the senior...
All right, I got to interrupt this because there's going to be more that I'm going to want to talk about.
Okay.
The last thing I want to do is not be able to meet that. That means absolute horse hockey about what you're actually capable of doing. Like, okay, good to note that you still have the desire to beat Donald Trump. You also had the desire to put Putin down. And I don't know if that's actually what the actual case was.
Economist and senior foreign policy specialist say, if I stop now, I'd go down in history as a pretty successful president. No one thought I could get done what we got done.
But are you being honest with yourself as well about your ability to defeat Donald Trump right now?
Yes.
George, yes. That's why I'm here. It's literally the only reason I'm here, and it's why I gave you those note cards.
Go back and watch that interview. I'm very curious. I would like to know what the stage looked like on the opposite side of the cameras, because every time Stephanopoulos asks a question that is a little bit more pressing than the last, because I think that, I mean, this is new frontier for this media against Joe Biden, which makes me think they just don't think Joe Biden is the guy anymore. And he's not cooperating, so they got to shift. But when Stephanopoulos goes just a little bit further and a little bit further, Biden leans back in his chair. He smiles with half of his mouth. Why does he only ever smile with a crooked smile in half his mouth? Ooh. You ever notice that?
No, I haven't.
He smiles with half of his mouth, and he looks, if you're watching the TV, he looks up and to the right of your screen almost every time. Who is he looking at? Who's telling him how to react? Who is there just for a visual affirmation? Why does he look to the side? Am I being psychotic by saying this? In the context where we don't watch him get marching orders, literally, of you will do this and then you will do that. And if he doesn't have them, he has no friggin' clue what he's supposed to do next. Who is he looking at? And why does the guy who's the president of the United States need to look anywhere for affirmation? If he looked away from George Stephanopoulos to answer that question, Bill O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor always used to have a body language specialist on, and I was like, yes, I love that. But I really pay attention to people's nonverbal reactions, because they will tell you a lot more with what they do versus what they say. And when people are talking to you and they look away and they do it repeatedly, there's usually a reason for that. Who is he looking at, and why does he look there every time these questions get difficult? And he leans back to kind of ha-ha laugh about whatever it is, as if the question didn't deserve his sincerity in his answer. Like, ha-ha, oh, come on, George, you know better than that. Here's one more.
Would you be willing to undergo an independent medical evaluation that included neurological and cognitive tests and release the results to the American people?
Look, I have a cognitive test every single day.
That's why we're here.
I think he might have meant literally, though.
Oh. What was the thing that Trump was said? He was like, bear, TV, VCR, fern, or something. I don't remember what it was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
They gave him some sort of cognitive test, because if you just ask him, he'll tell you how good it was.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about it in the debate, how great
That's
he was.
Right.
But I think that they would like show him a pattern, and then I think maybe he had to repeat it or something.
Then
I don't know.
He just said it out
but
loud.
But there's copy points. There are vid clips of him just going like, apple, cup, Pepsi, pencil, George of the Jungle, or something like that. And it's like, and the left plays it over and over and over again, like, gosh, come see how stupid this guy looks. And the right is like, it's stupid, but really funny. And we'll allow it.
I gotta say, when you ask the question, who does he keep looking at off camera? The only answer that came into my head was the church lady Could it be Satan?
Exactly. Here's the rest of that clip here real quick.
Every day I have that test. Everything I do. You know, not only am I campaigning, but I'm running the world.
Yeah, that's the problem, dude. Now listen, Corinne Jean-Pierre just started taking questions. I think she knew that we were going into a hard break, and she's like, I'll wait until the Annie Fry Show goes to hard break and
sneak this in here.
Let's Mystery Science Theater it when we come back.
Yeah.
And we'll only put you through as much as we can handle, which is simple.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.